You're listening to Triple Radio on the Fat Gatsby Network.
Get the go live notification.
And now we are also recording a podcast and we are streaming on the internet. We are streaming on the internet and we are recording a podcast.
That will stream on the internet at a later date.
Weiss, you look like you have a question. Do you have a question about, podcasting and or the streaming on the internet?
I mean, can we do both at the same time?
I mean, the internet has held up so far, but I am always making allowances for the idea that basically it's all held together with duct tape and wishes.
Yeah.
So attempting to do that could cause everything to crash.
I'm actually kind of learning how it all works right now.
You are learning how the internet works?
Oh. Yeah, or at least networking, yes. Because I am working on my CCNA certification.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
You said networking, and I assumed you were meeting the right people on the internet.
No, I don't know. I didn't know. No. I don't think that's possible.
Not at this point.
No, that time is long gone. Like 20 plus years ago, we met some nice people on the internet.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Met them in person. Yeah. A lot of great people forums.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. I was just thinking about this the other day I was thinking about all the superior musicians to me that wrote music for us. And then went on to bigger, better things.
Oh, yeah. It's hard for me not to brag about people that I, you know, had tertiary interactions with at
Let's
times.
Do it, though, Weez. Let's drop some names. Let's name drop. Let's be obnoxious about it.
I mean, Vert is our biggest one, right?
Obviously, right off the bat.
Vert never contributed anything other than a box quote.
I thought he, well,
no,
yeah.
He wrote quote, something
I thought
for
he did
RCR,
a song on River
he?
City, didn't he?
Nope.
No?
I mean, you know more than I do.
I'm
not going to say you did. I thought he did, but
Years of having the entire soundtrack on like my iPod Mini and taking it out jogging, I've seen Jake Vert Kaufman's name on a track.
I don't know where it is on my computer right now. Maybe it's in the X-Strike folder.
He didn't do anything for like
folder.
He wouldn't have for any other movie.
No, he was too busy because he was already making music for video games at the time. Mm-hmm. And then only occasionally doing stuff for, video game websites. Well, I mean, I guess he was trying to get VG Mix off the ground.
Mm.
Yeah. I had Hot Tunes filled the air, the soundtrack to River City Rumble somewhere on this computer.
Yes. All right. Well,
I don't know where
it is. Jake Kaufman's officially dead to me then. He never wrote for us. Never mind. Fuck that guy.
His quote is on the box. His band playing the music is on the DVD.
All right. So all right. Close enough. I'll accept
it. Some way.
Vert, I love you. I always loved you. Never said a word against you. Dale North?
Dale North. There you go.
Illustrious Dale North.
Who did music for the entire soundtrack to Silent Horror.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Some music for Resident Horror. A lot of that got lost in a hard drive crash.
Oh, really?
And he
was going to do the music for SideQuest. Did the teaser and at least the teaser. Yeah.
And he is the reason the Nth Mile has music, because he bailed us the fuck out on that one. Because the guy DCT, I think, was the remixer's name who started working on the beats and then had like some personal stuff come up. And I was like on my knees begging Dale North, like, we need beats and we need them now. And because he is a crazy person. I mean, a lot of this is just it's pure Dale North. But like he bailed us out big time on those. And now like I shouldn't say that he can't work on stuff, because when we had our brief little revival back in whenever it was, a deal was struck where Mahoney sent him a Genesis and Dale owes him a song. Dale's still like, I want to make music
North
with you
owes
guys.
Us a song.
Or at least Mahoney, you know. But,
listen, Dale has the most beautiful home studio I've ever seen in my life. I covet it every single day. He should write us a track.
I do love seeing pictures of his studio.
Oh, yeah.
It's been a long time.
Yeah, A-Rival did all the music to Project Snake. Soundtracks. I still have many available of that, by the way. The Silent Horror soundtrack, I believe, is on Bandcamp. I don't know if Mr. It Rival ever put Project Snake up there, but I have CDs out the wazoo because he didn't heed my warnings to not print 1,000 of them.
Silent Horror is on, I believe, available on all streaming because I have it on my Tidal. So, you know.
These still great soundtracks, unbelievable soundtracks. So good.
That's the thing.
And then we had, I think Glenn Case did some work on Resident Horror.
I mean, we have to mention Eric Ruth with DJ Potato.
Yeah. Alshon did some work on Resident Horror.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. So,
yeah,
great musicians. And yeah, Dale is just, you know, matter of time before he goes down as one of the all time great video game music composers.
For real. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I was thinking about the reason I ever actually started composing music in the first place. And for the most part, every chance I've been given to compose music is always because someone better than me was unavailable. And I struggled to fill their shoes. The film competition that I wrote some music for now allows AI music.
This is the 48-hour film festival.
The 48-hour film project. Yes. I'm upset about that. It's a bummer.
Yeah, they allow it for basically writing your entire script, though it doesn't say that. You could use it for ideas and conceptualizing and drafting. God. The whole thing, right?
Yeah.
Once you.
Well, yeah, at least Bandcamp has banned it. There's a lot of people coming out to specifically like ban AI. Spotify is being shitty. They're not banning. They're putting like a tiny little label on human made stuff, but not the AI stuff.
Interesting.
I believe is how that's working.
The horse shit of the writing of the script, because it's like, if you've done the 48-hour film fest, it starts at like what, 6 or 7 PM Friday night, and you draw your thing, you draw your genre, and like then it's go time, and you have to deliver the film by 48 hours from then. And so it's like, I vividly remember like pulling our genre, which was comedy, which me and Rory were like, God fucking damn it. But then having to be like, okay, you know, as like all these, you know, you have like a location and actors and like, you know, you have like some ideas kind of lined up for resources you could use. And we're like, okay, how are we going to fit something into what we have available?
Well, that's what's so frustrating about you saying, like, it's specifically meant for limitations. Don't cut corners. That's just, it's literally not the point.
As I've said elsewhere, the 48-hour film project, which is a nationwide endeavor, sort of officiated locally by volunteers, and our local volunteers in Buffalo are spectacular guys, and I hate that they have to deal with this. But they do have a lot of rules about what they prohibit in terms of AI. To their credit. But as a friend of mine on Facebook rightly pointed out, she laid out an entire scenario based on what is and is not allowed, according to the rules, by which you could conceivably produce your entire movie with AI and still technically be on the right side of the rules, which is shitty.
Friday night is for staying up late writing your script. That's for getting that together. And then Saturday you film, and then Sunday is editing.
Yeah.
Like otherwise, just make a short. Why do it in the 48-hour film fest at that point?
It's a huge
just make your shitty AI short.
Yeah. I had a teenager, one of my daughter's co-stars in the school musicals, wanting to get into more film work, and he reached out to me to see what's possible in the area. And usually, one of the first things I tell people is, sign up for the 48-hour film festival. You know, it gets you some video copy of yourself on camera to start with, like to show up, because you need a reel. That's a great way to start building your reel. And now I can't even tell them to do that. Like, it's such a great first start for people who want to get into filmmaking. And Nah, I'm just sad. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, hey, everyone. Welcome to Triple Radio.
Hi.
Live from New York. It's Saturday night.
That's Tim. Weast. He's Dave. Yep. Some of us are some of us.
Some of us are Dave.
Some of us are all of us, Modern Mushroom.
Oh, man.
Yes.
Yeah, we missed April. Dave, you know, sorry. April was too busy in the end for us to do this. So now it's early May. It's May 4th. May the 4th be with you.
Wait a minute. Wasn't the one we recorded at the end of March technically the April episode?
No.
Because didn't we do a March one? But
did we?
Yeah, we did. We did a March one. And then like 3 weeks later did another early one because I was going out of town. We're good.
I don't believe it.
I think we're square.
I don't think so.
I don't think we owe these people a thing.
I think we do.
All right. See you guys later.
Yeah. I mean, me relying on actually posting these things. So the last one was Thursday, March 26th. And I know we have January, February, and March. No, we're out I mean, like, it gets... Somebody might have forgot to post the February episode until early March, so...
Oh, word? Oh, well.
That might be why.
Okay, well. What's a month, anyway? It's all arbitrary.
Yeah.
Hey, welcome to Triple Radio.
It doesn't matter. Hey, we haven't missed an episode in, like, 2 years. We were so well-behaved.
I was gonna say, it's pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good. Yeah. So yeah, it is of course Star Wars Day.
It is. I'm actually wearing a Star Wars t-shirt.
I'm just wearing
on camera.
A gray
it's a tasteful
shirt.
Logo. Visit Tatooine.
Yeah.
Twin Suns.
Actually, okay, hang on here. So let's do this real quick. We're not gonna make this a huge part of the show.
No.
Let's give our tier list rankings of Star Wars movies just like off the top of our head.
Okay.
Jeez.
Yeah.
So yeah. Yeah. No, well, you know, it's just like a, you know.
I know there's just so many right now.
It's not a definitive like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. It's just like, oh, is this S on your personal list? Is it A? We'll go S, A, B, C, D, F. Not E.
That's
I don't know. F. Whatever. You don't have to. I was going to like pull up visual stuff before this, but then I was doing
S-tier.
Stuff with my.
S tier. Let's
okay,
go.
No. Wait. No. Okay.
No?
Okay. Stop. No. We're going to go through.
Are we just doing films?
I'm just going to do films.
You go film by film and decide the tier.
That's what I'm going to do. I'm just not going to start spitting out what fits and fuck.
All right.
No.
All right.
A New Hope.
S tier. All the way. 100%.
Yeah.
That's what
original trilogy are all S tier for me.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah. I am a Jedi defender. The second act is rough, but the first act and last act is like my favorite Star Wars.
Oh, wow, okay. Really?
Right. I think like it's... Like going in the barge and like before, you know, like the before it got cut down ending to Jedi, like all that stuff.
Anyway, yeah. So yeah. Empire also S rank. Yes.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's among my favorite shit in Star Wars.
Oh, for sure.
And then, Jedi, I might go like high A on that. But
yeah.
I'm with you in that. Like, I'm not like, I love the third act of Jedi, like fucking rules.
I was going to make a Back to the Future comparison, but it's not really as one-to-one as I thought it was, Alton, because like Back to the Future Part 3 is like inarguably a much better overall film than 2. But in terms of it being a two-part story, it is less of it, not as good a conclusion to 2, I guess. I don't know. But it doesn't work. The metaphor doesn't work. Forget I said anything.
I've warmed up to Back to the Future 3 more through the years as well.
I like 3. Like
Yeah. I always liked it, but I think I don't know. All the Clara stuff works.
Yeah. I've gotten so off track already.
Yeah, no, I think I've seen 3, maybe, no, I think Back to the Future 1 has caught up, but for a while, 3 was the one that I always caught on TV, so that was the one I had seen the most. Prequel trilogy, Phantom Menace, remarkable for us all skipping school, remarkable.
A great day, strong memories.
For movie tickets being under $5.
I have not gone back to since 1999.
Yeah, so that's the problem, is that I can't really.
I'm not going to say it's an F.
Yeah. No, I feel like I'm what is above F?
D, right now. D. D. D.
Yeah. Yeah. D. I would put it at D, I think, right now. Like,
let's go with that. Yeah.
I think so. I think that's probably right. I think C is a little too nice to it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, although, yeah.
Is Attack of the Clones really an improvement?
Okay, so here we go.
And again,
I don't know that it is. I
hold
think...
on. No. Okay. Attack of the Clones. I fucking love Attack of the Clones.
I remember you did. Yeah.
Yes. I was thinking about this today and I'm just like, that might be like my number one, like, guilty pleasure movie.
Gosh, really?
I used to defend half of it, but I haven't gone back again.
Yeah.
Like, to any of those three. I was like, the Obi-Wan stuff, or I liked it like enough at the time, but like,
yeah,
there were so many things I did not like. So it was like,
well, that was like, I love the chase through Coruscant at the beginning. Like, all mm-hmm. of Obi-Wan's stuff is, I think, very cool. All the stuff with Anakin and Padme is something I laugh at. And then like the end is just like some madcap nonsense.
It is. Christopher Lee. Christopher Lee is a bright spot.
Yep.
Like, there's
one
not
of my favorite lightsabers.
Yeah,
I love the Dooku saber.
And yes, all of Obi-Wan's stuff, like doing the detective work of a Jedi. You know, like that is all interesting, compelling stuff.
Yeah.
So okay, you're might making the, a case.
Might be the best, like, pure Jedi stuff, like, in the movies. Like it's in terms of seeing like what they do, like, with their lives.
Yeah.
Like, you know, going out to a planet, investigating some stuff, and, like, you know, dealing with it by himself.
Yeah, it's a police procedural.
It's a little unfair, and we're ranking the movies, but obviously this is the right crowd for, because we love the Genndy's Clone Wars, and, like, that made 2 and 3 better. Yes. Like, just straight That's true. Up.
There's a lot of ancillary stuff around 2 and 3 heightens just the, its existence. That I have not ever really actually seen. I really didn't watch Tartakovsky's.
I
watched a little snippets here and there, but I never got the chance to watch the whole thing through. Obviously, I've never seen much of Filoni's contemporaneous stuff. So
yeah, the Genndy stuff's on YouTube, I think. Well, I'm sure it's on Disney Plus, but I mean,
it probably makes sense. And it's, where
I
do you guys
go through
put,
it a lot?
Put the Attack of the Clones.
I mean, you're.
Either D or F. I'm not
entirely
sure.
So you can put
sure.
it wherever you want. Yeah. It's at least a B for me, because I find it very entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, my opinion might change if I went back to it with that mindset. I was going to stick it probably actually below Phantom Menace.
Oof.
Like, that's the thing. I would personally rank it below. Based on my memory alone, I would rank it below Phantom Menace. But that is also largely just due to nostalgia, about, you know, the inherent excitement around Phantom Menace.
See, it's still, the only things. The only things that from Phantom Menace that still stand out to me really are, you know, of course, the pod race and the fight at the end. Whereas, like, Clone Wars has more going on throughout it for me. Yeah. I find it more interesting overall as a movie.
I guess I don't know which movie's dialogue would be worse to suffer through. That's my main memory of both of them, is just the most worst insufferable dialogue I've ever heard committed to cinema.
I think the performances are better in two, and neither one of them are great with the dialogue.
Yeah,
it's just, I don't know. All right. Anyways, three. Revenge of the Sith.
I'll give that a
C. Revenge of the Fifth. Yeah, you give that a C.
A C or even a B. I like it.
Yeah.
I like the body horror at the end.
I like it as well. I haven't gone back to it as much. A lot of people rank episode 3 up there, like, tippy top.
Yeah, I know that rose. Yeah.
That might be a generational thing, like people that are slightly younger than us, like that's where they came on board with Star Wars, and so Revenge of the Sith, you know, probably on paper the best of the prequel trilogy. Yeah, probably a B for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's dramatic moments are undoubtedly cliched and unearned, but they are so goddamn heightened. Like, there's still something very deeply, almost chilling about when, like, those doors slide open and Anakin discovers the room full of young Jedi and murders them.
Murders them.
I would have to go back. Yeah, I just remember it not getting the feels out of it. Yeah. Like, I think I was, it was so melodramatic, I couldn't get past more the laughing than anything at that point.
Sure.
Because it would have been, we all knew, so it was so built up, too.
The Younglings. All right, sidetrack before we do the sequel trilogy. Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. I know we diverge here.
Yeah. God, it's a B for me. Just such an expert, wonderfully constructed, beautifully made movie that just does not come together.
I thought you were going to say it was worse than that.
No.
Yeah, I was going to say.
No, I was going to say inarguably a skillfully made movie. There's nothing I can really fault beyond just the structure, or, you know, and.
Well, for me, if I don't know, like, it's definitely a, if I'm giving the prequels a D, this is definitely a C. Like, that, you know, it's the characters are flat. Like, and I come out of it wanting to feel things and not. So it's a very frustrating movie in a lot of ways.
Yeah. It might be an A for me. It's grown on me a lot over time.
Yeah.
Solo, A Star Wars Story.
Didn't see.
Definitely at least a B for me.
Yeah. Wow. Very much enjoyed it.
Yeah. A fun, inconsequential romp.
Okay.
I saw it 2 years after, so completely divorced from the weight of expectations. I had fun with that movie, and I've never seen it again. Don't care about seeing it again. It did not matter to me, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah. I would not give it an F, but it would be probably a D, where I feel nothing regarding Solo, A Star Wars Story. There's only one movie I'd give an F to. moving on to the sequel trilogy. Force Awakens. We like Force Awakens.
I have not seen it. I haven't gone back to it, but I'm gonna give it an A.
But wait, you haven't seen it?
I haven't seen it since. Sorry. I haven't returned to it since theaters.
Yeah.
It went down a bit. I mean, like, obviously the first time was a very high.
Yes. Yes.
Like, it's an a B or an A, I guess. Somewhere in there.
I'd give it with a bit of weight given to the first time I saw it and the feeling that it gave me initially, which is, you know, kind of come back down to earth afterwards. But man, it felt good to see that movie in the theater when I saw it in the theater.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, J.J. Abrams is insane at casting, and four new, you know, actors / characters were great.
Yeah.
Very promising.
Yes.
Very promising. Yes. A lot of potential.
If you can divorce it from where it went, that movie was exactly the right movie at exactly the right time. It was exactly what it needed to be to start a new trilogy. And I think you can really only fault it in hindsight.
Well, yes and no. I mean, like, that's that delicate balance of, like, it was and it worked, and obviously, like, on the financial side it worked, but also, like, it's a very safe movie going back too. It's just like it had to be.
Yeah, you're right. No, I agree with that.
It's two sides of the coin. It's not always like a bad thing, but yeah, like, some risks would have been interesting, which brings us to Episode 8.
The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
Last
Jedi.
That's an A or an S for me. So that's like an A plus S minus, maybe. Something like that.
Yep. I'm exactly with you.
Yeah.
All right.
It's one of my favorites of all of them. So yeah, it would be.
Yeah. For the films. Yes. Like usually doing a list, this gets cut with other things.
Yeah. Definitely probably a B or a C for me. I did go back to it at least once. It kind of confirmed my feelings about how, again, like, well made, and I understand the intent. I get the intent, and intellectually I don't disagree with the intent. But it feels so deliberately contrarian.
Which is funny, because I feel like that was, I don't know, why I did not watch episode 9. It's like, I didn't feel the contrarianness in, well, sure, that's got to be a word, in 8, but...
Curiosity.
Yes. It's, I don't know, maybe because I had enough behind-the-scenes stuff with Rian Johnson, I never thought of him as someone that would, like, specifically try to do that. Certainly subvert, and, you know... I don't know. There's a lot of reading between the lines of just like, how much is a director? How much is a studio doing this? You know,
I believe his intention is subversion, but I also believe the net result is sabotage.
See, I wouldn't say it's sabotage if the questions the first movie was asking had any answers. So. Right. That's really the inherent problem with the whole sequel trilogy for me is that they put hooks into The Force Awakens that they did not have a clear, like, well, this is where we're going in the end with this, that they could at least hand off as a framework to the next director to be like, okay, this is where we're going. But it was just like, well, you know, there's no end game here. So
Part of that is like, being obligated to use those toys in the first place is just sort of like, you have to do something with Snoke. Okay. Like, all right.
To me, I'll admit that there is roughness around the edges, but it's what I wanted, because it was something, it was steering this, you know, massive starship of Star Wars into a different direction.
More potential again, but it felt like the most, like, if Rian Johnson had 9, or if it was still going in that way. Like, I don't like the casino stuff. There's other stuff that I'm just like, but it feels small enough that I can overlook it versus prequel trilogy kind of thing.
I'm surprised, I'm going to say something that's probably going to sound really dumb to smarter people than me.
Idiot. I'm going to say so much.
What you just said about Rian Johnson guiding this big old starship. Is Admiral Holdo a self-insert character?
Who knows?
I can't be the first person to have thought of this, but it's the first time it's occurred to me. Like, everyone's mad at me and everyone thinks I'm wrong to do this, but I'll be proven right in the end.
No, maybe. Who knows? We'll see. I mean, still very divisive. This is also where Star Wars really started to suck again, because you couldn't. The experience of enjoying Star Wars, because it became very, like,
toxic.
You were on one end or the other of this. And, you know, for the most part, no offense, Dave, the shittiest people are on the, you know, that didn't like Last Jedi because it was too woke.
Crappy team to be on.
Unfortunate team you've aligned yourself with, incidentally. Yes,
the enemy of my enemy is not my friend.
No.
And also, like, it's that plus seeing them, like, cater to, right? Like, that's, there's more and more like, oh, okay, well, if the fans want this.
Yeah, and then, to then dovetail into the Rise of Skywalker.
That's the last one.
So it is.
Okay, I just know Skywalker. Well,
I'll tell you all of which I watched, which was The Crawl. I had to see it with my own eyes, and then I turned.
The Dead Speak or whatever it is.
Yeah.
That was set up in Fortnite. They did an event in Fortnite.
I forgot about that. What a legacy.
Episode 9.
The Dead Speak.
So once again, it's just crazy to me that, like, this series, going back to where we were in high school, being like, wow, the culmination of all things. You're going to be real excited. No, I'm going to skip it.
this is an F for me. This is a hard F.
Sure, same.
Oh, it's an F for you now, Dave?
I thought it is. You liked it. Oh, yeah. Yeah, no. Okay. And for... Okay. Again, it is much harder to divorce the quality of this movie from the production, you know, from all the accompanying toxicity surrounding it than it is, say, anything in the prequel trilogy, because at least the prequel trilogy was made with the best of intentions. However much George Lucas personally had, like, let whatever screenwriting skills he may have had lapse. That's my main problem with the prequel trilogy really is just the dialogue. That George Lucas is not a screenwriter. He just cannot write dialogue to save his life. Nope. That's really the worst thing about it. Otherwise, I can totally accept that, like, you know, these movies exist to usher a new generation into this mythos. It's not as much for me as it is for, you know, a new generation of kids. It's got to appeal to them. I get that, and I'm fine with that. It doesn't have to be for me. But Rise of Skywalker cynical. Is not the same. Yes, yeah, it is so much. Yeah. Yes, it's not cynical. Yeah.
Like, even lighting wise, like, when I think of Phantom Menace, the first thing I think of is bright. Yeah. I mean, too bright, but bright.
Everything, you know, equally lit all the time.
Yes.
TV, I mean, that,
you know, just, yeah, the early green screen stuff. Yeah. We had all watching that stuff, downloading the trailer.
I remember seeing, like, oh, we're shooting the whole, like, so much of the movie, and they're just green screen sets, and thinking to myself, is that a good idea? I don't know if that's a good idea. I don't know if they should do that just because they can. I don't think it makes it better. Yeah, Rise of Skywalker is then, like, a...
It's inexcusable.
It's reacting to the reaction of... Right. You know, to the feedback from The Last Jedi, which was very loud and, I guess, negative as a whole. I don't know. You know, the people who were negative about it, they decided to turn course correct in the opposite direction, be like, okay, we're picking up where we left off in Force Awakens, and, like, you know, Rey is related to somebody and, like, gonna fall in love with Kylo Ren. That's a bad idea.
There people of color in some of these movies? Don't worry about them. You don't have to think about them anymore.
I mean, yeah.
Can I just
will
say, like the sound of Rey Kenobi is so much nicer. That was just, when people were guessing, I'm just like, well, it sounds better.
Yeah. Like, people are just like, were they sitting there thinking, well, that's too obvious. We have to do something way worse. the other end. But just like, I'll say Finn got kind of done dirty in The Last Jedi and didn't get as much screen time as he should have, but that this did not make up for that. And Rose getting just like, you can stay behind at the beginning of the movie, and people cheering in the theater like, good, this character.
Really?
I didn't
know they were cheering.
Oh, people were so happy that Rose got left behind because they hated Rose, and she had no business.
That's literally the worst part of Back to the Future 2 is leaving her in the car.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just everything with stupid clone Palpatine and the, we need to search for this Sith dagger to tell us where to go.
That matches the horizon perfectly.
Oh, I heard about that. That's the thing, is I didn't feel bad just like hearing everybody talk about it. It was honestly really fun to hear everybody describe this movie.
We're gonna go back to the second Death Star wreck, and fight, and we're gonna have to have Ghost Han Solo, because unfortunately Carrie Fisher died. That sucked, and that's not their fault. But like when I first saw the trailer that said it is the conclusion of the Skywalker saga, I was like, because it felt like, if nothing else, Last Jedi had opened things up tremendously for future movies. Just like, oh man, there's so many places we could go for here. And they were just like, well, we need to wrap up a trilogy. And it was like, oh no. Like, you need at least two more movies to wrap up whatever you have going on here, and not just like having people ride horses across a Star Destroyer. That's bad. It's so fucking bad.
moments that were meant to be so like decisive and conclusive that they featured in the trailer. The one I'm thinking of in particular is C-3PO saying, like, you know, me to say goodbye to my friends or something to that effect. Yes. And then you see that moment in the movie and it's the most unearned pandering bullshit. Mm-hmm. Like just forced and not just like just to get that clip for the trailer. That's the only reason the scene exists. It just so crass and emotionally manipulative.
Again, I mean like back to like frustrating, disappointing. That's kind of why I didn't want to see it, because like even you know Kylo with the lightsaber, incredible in Force Awakens, you know, like that sort of thing. All the potential there, all the Kylo Ray stuff, all the stuff in 8, opening it up, like, and there was no question none of that was going to be paid off. And, like, that's, I just couldn't walk into that.
Yeah, but, I mean, like, it kind of killed the franchise for, like, they had all these movies and stuff that were in trilogies in development, and, like, it all got, like, canceled. And just thrown out the window, and there has not, which, you know, honestly might have been good. Because
I mean, I was saturated anyway.
Yeah, I was also not looking forward to just like, oh, there's just going to be a Star Wars movie like every 6 months now, like with Marvel. And I don't think that's a good idea. So now that we're 7 years later and we're getting a Mandalorian Grogu movie, which, you know, I don't think it looks like incredible, but
it looks fun.
Yeah, it's the first time in 7 years like, are getting a Star Wars movie. It looks absolutely fun. I'm excited to go see it next week. I hope it's a good romp and like a good, you know, this is the thing that people, one of the things that people like the most out of recent years is The Mandalorian. Even if the show itself has been like uneven, people like the character and Grogu.
I mean, you can't go wrong with like Lone Wolf and Cub, Warrior with a Child.
Yeah.
Like, it's great. It's a winning formula. Mm-hmm. Like I'm tempted to see it without having seen half of the first season of Mandalorian at this point and just going in and seeing how that goes.
I hope that it is like enjoyable for like if you just kind of have a passing knowledge of Mandalorian and Grogu and just like, oh, this is just one of their adventures.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's not dragging baggage from the show into it, because like where the show left off was kind of felt like a series finale, I guess. I don't know if they're planning on making more of it, but you know, they had like settled down and like had their own little place to live, and you know, they kind of wrapped up a lot of they'd wrapped up, you know, the big storylines with Bo-Katan and Boba Fett and whatnot. So it left off in a good place. Ready to talk about other stuff.
All right.
Which is, I was like, I honestly didn't have too much this month, so that made sense.
We filled appropriately.
Yeah, I literally have no new movies.
I have one.
Yeah.
Well, of course.
It's the Super Mario Galaxy movie.
Yeah.
That's right.
Right.
It feels like forever ago, because it was
a long time ago.
It was literally a month ago that I saw. It was at the beginning of spring break, so it was before Easter. It was like, it came out April 1st and saw it on the 3rd, so it's been over a month. I took my kid and his one of his buddies to go see it. They had an absolutely riotous time watching the movie. They loved it. So much fun. Yeah, I didn't have the worst time watching the movie. I was much more put off by the first one. I think not using licensed music for everything.
Yeah, I heard that was much better.
A tremendous amount. There was like maybe one bit of like licensed music that's used like at the very beginning and not in a bad way. Just when like Yoshi is wandering around in the real world. And other than that, there's none of that. It's all just like, you know, adapted arrangements from the games. And that's, so I'm, you know, I'm not being shoved out of the movie and rolling my eyes every five minutes when you're playing a licensed music. So that's cool. Yeah, I mean, like, really, the movie is a series of scenes that is like, here, we're going to reference this part or this thing or some or things from the games that you know, and we're going to do it in this scene. Then we're going to move on to something else. And that's fine. Like, you know, I was kind of thinking to myself, like, as someone who made River City Rumble, I don't know if I can really, you know, be mad
on that.
I don't know. I don't know if I can, like, really, like, tear them down for doing that in this movie.
I would argue you still had more connective tissue.
Yes. Yeah. I think so. Yeah, for sure.
Also, I mean, like, you're joking about, but comedy gets like an out at the end. Mm-hmm. I don't think Mario Galaxy is quite playing in that sense.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah. It's just like, okay, here's the opening scene with Rosalina and, like, the Starmies. She gets kidnapped by Bowser Jr. driving, like, a mech that's from Galaxy. It's all very Galaxy. And then here's Mario and Luigi in the desert world from Odyssey, and they just find Yoshi, and now Yoshi's with them, and, like, now Yoshi's in the movie. That's it. Yoshi doesn't really have a character arc. He's just with them the whole time, and he just says Yoshi, so... Top tier Childish Gambino performance there.
Oh, right. Yeah. That's so funny.
Yeah, the whole thing, you know, and the movie mostly breaks out to, like, you know, Rosalina's kidnapped, and then Princess Peach takes off to rescue her, and then Mario and Luigi and Bowser, you know, go off in pursuit. So those are kind of, but, you know, Peach gets her own side of the movie running around with Toad. What I would argue is, like, my favorite scene is, they go into this casino that's, like, on the inside of a cube. So it's like a very Galaxy-ish setup. It's a casino but it's run by, you know, Super Mario Brothers 2 bosses.
Yeah.
Wart is the casino boss, and he's there with, like, Birdo and Mouser, and the crab shows up. No Triclide. Yeah,
Inspired By is great. Mm-hmm. I would love to see that. Yeah, where you're like, this could have fit in the game.
Yeah, and then she has, like, this big, like, kind of gravity-defying fight with a bunch of ninjas that's, like, actually pretty cool. And, like, oh, that's cool. That's sick. Ooh. I like that. You know, Star Fox is Fox McCloud's in the movie. Yep. And, you know, he's in the movie. He's, like, in half the movie.
They really want that Smash movie, huh?
Yeah, like, the Pikmin are only there for, like, a second, and Game and Watch are only there for a second, but yeah, Fox McCloud, they're like, hey, I mean, he's like, oh, you guys need a ship to get where you're going, and, like, that's the guy. And and there's, like, a 30-40 second flashback sequence that's done in, like, Illumination's best impression of, like, 80s anime style of of, like, you know, this is, you know, Star Fox's backstory with, like, fighting with R-Wings and stuff like that with his buddies. Now he got knocked into a different, you know, dimension or whatever. He's trying to find his way back. I'm like, that's cool. That's really cool. Like, if you want to make a Star Fox movie that looks like that and put it out on, you know, what, Paramount or whatever, like, please, that would be awesome. So, and that's the movie, like the, just, it's incredible to look at. It's so colorful. Like, they're just, like, you know, they got
all the colors. Yes.
Red. It's very yellow. Pleasant to look at.
It's very pleasing. I've heard as much about it just largely feeling like a series of disconnected scenes. And while obviously that feels like a critique, when compared to if the alternative is a bad narrative, then I think there's an argument to be made to say, like, we know what we are. Let's just make this pandering fan service for the grown-ups.
Well, they're one in the same, though. I would, it's pedantic, but, like, a bad narrative is, I mean, it's that old
scenes.
It's Force Awakens, right? Or like JJ stuff, or that's that old Trey Parker thing about, like, if this thing happens, it has to lead into that instead of this, then that. That's not, like, a story. Then you're just, like, fading out. Let's say Into Darkness, the worst Star Trek. That's the easiest one to kind of see that happening.
Into Darkness, the worst Star Trek.
Yeah. We're not ranking them.
He's not wrong.
I'm saying that right now.
No. We'll do that sometime. Maybe.
But I would put that one in as an F. Yes.
Yeah. It's like Beyond so good. The other
end. Beyond Rules.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's, you know, they almost have like an emotional story about Bowser, you know, being a father or lack thereof to his kid. But you know, we don't want to look at that for too long, you know.
okay.
Avert your eyes from this learning moment. It's like, no, we need to do more stuff over here. Yeah, it's, you know, cool to look at. And they got through. Yeah. It felt more enjoyable and slightly more coherent than the first one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I definitely liked it more than the first one. I feel like most other people are like, oh my God, it's even worse than the first one. But I think just a combination of the lack of licensed pop music, and I guess just jumping around between things more, like you see a lot more different Mario stuff. I mean, it's like, yeah, it's stuff I recognize on the screen, just like, oh, there's that. It's like, you know, and like I said, the kids had a blast. Kids had an absolute blast.
Well, it's coherent, I think, and I put this to both of you, where I think my earlier point comes from is that I guess I had presumed from what I had heard about it was that this movie had a less coherent plot than the first one, that the plot of the first one, thin though it was still a functional skeleton, just not a particularly interesting one, whereas arguably this one was more disjointed but not necessarily the worse for it. Was that not your impression?
Yeah, no, I guess you could put it like that. I mean, I don't know. I still think it's a pretty clear through line of just, you know, like, okay, we're going off into space to pursue, you know, look for Rosalina, and Mario's looking for Peach, and just, you know, that takes you to different wacky places along the way.
It's enough.
That's it. Yeah, it's enough. It's fine. They're going to make more of them. They make so much the money. Yeah, but it was a big month for trailers for video game movies, for Resident Evil and Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat 2, which struck me when I was writing them down in my notes. I'm like, these are the same movies they've been making since the late 90s.
Yeah, gosh,
that's sure. kind of the thing, too.
Street Fighter.
They keep trying
in Resident Evil.
Like. And now we're into the, you know, the meta like tellings of these
movies
for the most part. Not Resident Evil, I don't think, but
no, yeah, I'm not quite sure what's going on with Resident Evil quite yet.
Well, we discussed that a little bit in a text chain, and yeah. Weiss, I never heard back from you. Do you fear that this is a thing where Zach Cregger is going to get Chloe Zhao'd, and like it's going to be a situation where they're just sort of using him for his clout, but not going to let him.
I don't think that will quite, like, it's the Chloe Zhao thing was, that's a weird, they had an art house director, a very, very good art house director, but it wasn't like they were, had like popular momentum right now, right? Like, Zach Cregger, like, everybody besides me, like, head over heels over Weapons and just got an Oscar for its, you know, fan favorite character, all this stuff. So like they're happy to, it feels like they, and I'm, I believe he's like a big Resident Evil fan too. So like,
oh, sure. Like, oh, I don't doubt it.
Go ahead. Like to me, it's like they're playing super coy with like it being full Resident Evil. And they're trying to tell you like either one, it's playing safe of just like get as many people in. It's just like, this is a horror movie. It's something you're going to like, blank, and like halfway through it's just like I was making fun of, like, this is just what he's done for both movies. It's just like there's switcheroo about halfway through, whatever it is.
Okay.
And it seems pretty clear that going to Raccoon City, or, you know, making it not Resident Evil until like a surprise moment feels like why you would get him in the first place, sort of thing. However you dress it up.
Okay.
Go ahead.
No, you go first and then I've got.
Oh, yeah. It is repetitive for what I was saying with my thing with Weapons was like the first half of it was so well done that I was bummed out when it switched to something completely different and then eventually came back to what was there.
Okay.
So like,
I still haven't seen it, but I'm
Yeah.
Now more eager to see it than ever.
Like it set up the small town that it was set in really, really well.
Okay.
So like, he has that skill, and I just want him to kind of do that as a full movie. So like, there's a lot of good there. So I don't want to like shit on it, and I still want to see him succeed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sort of thing. I've just had the wool pulled over my eyes twice.
Okay. Not being familiar with Kreger's work myself, and just sort of putting this, juxtaposing this against the extant franchise of Resident Evil films, where I feel there's an opportunity here that does not always exist with video game adaptations, is that there is an established history with this franchise. So he is not necessarily under the pressure of making the definitive Resident Evil adaptation. There's already so many Resident Evil films. He can, you know, hopefully they
which
have
I would describe as definitive under any circumstances.
I know, but right. but like, you know, there's clearly an attempt to like, oh, let's replicate these characters in live action. Let's replicate this scenario in live action.
I mean, they did. I mean, Welcome to Raccoon City, the one from, I guess it was like 5 years ago now. That was like, we're going to have all the characters up front and do Resident Evil 1 and Resident Evil 2 stuff, which I actually never saw it.
Was that because
I heard it was it's live action. Yes. There was like an animated one on Netflix, I believe. Mm. But no, Welcome to Raccoon City. That is a fully live action movie. That is trying to faithfully adapt those first two games, probably biting off more than it can chew if you're trying to tell two games worth of shit at the same time. But yeah, I have not seen it because it's supposed to be bad, but that was supposed to be, you know, trying to be very accurate. Whereas like the original Mila Jovovich series, like, I don't know how you'd put what that what that series does other than it goes places.
I mean, it's...
The first two are pretty faithful. Yeah, even
I don't know. I have no problem with like interior logic of like after that first one is just sort of like, okay, that's what these movies called Resident Evil are.
Yes. I mean, and Apocalypse is still pretty good too.
Is that two?
That's two. That's the one that has Nemesis.
Two was the one I enjoyed. Yeah. Three, I did not, and then I stopped.
three is not good, and then they get escalate with a shifted mindset. They get very good. and you just keep wondering like, why, what the fuck are you doing?
But yeah, I mean, you know, that was always my defense of the original of the, well, not the original, my defense of the Super Mario Brothers movie, from the Illumination one, was that it felt like it has to be the definitive Super Mario Brothers on celluloid experience. And so how do you serve everyone? And you can't. So I hope that Kreger has the latitude to make a more focused, like, you know, I'm going to pick from these specific elements of Resident Evil that I love and interpret that into film. And it does not need to be beholden to everything, and it doesn't need to please everybody. That's, I guess that's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Whereas I think Street Fighter 2, since there has not been another Street Fighter 2 movie, you know, a live action Western, you know, a produced Street Fighter 2 movie, that it does feel the need to be like, here's this character, here's this character, here's this, here's all your favorites. And for a lot of people are seem to be loving that.
Well, why are you disrespecting the Jean-Claude Van Damme movie?
I know.
How dare I? I know.
Yeah,
I mean, well, I that's mean, there was that. Where
there was Legend of Chun-Li. There's been a couple of Street Fighter movies,
And the anime, of course. But like,
well, I feel like this is the other way, you know, where it's like, oh, they tried to adapt them, you know, in the original Street Fighter into this more into a non-fighting tournament setting, and like throw these characters in and make them work. And in this one, they're just like, well, we're just gonna do it as dumb as possible.
I mean, we already discussed my fear, and the vibe I was getting was the very like Fury, and I liked Kung Fury enough, but it feels like the making fun of the tropes and very meme-y kind of take on the movie. Like, yeah, just, I don't know.
Well, it's like, well, I would say cynical trailer, joke side. Well, yeah. From the trailer, yeah, like Cammy commenting on Chun-Li's thighs.
Exactly,
like,
stuff like that.
That's a very, like, okay, you don't have to hit everything that people say about Street Fighter type deal.
Yeah, I mean,
that's just whoever cut that trailer together wanting to capitalize on that style of humor and get people talking in that way. And hopefully a feature-length movie with space between those gags will feel a little more natural. That's my hope.
I mean... yeah, and we're certainly in an era where, like, trailers can be completely different than the movie. It would just have to be very different. At the, like, the tone was just not working for me whatsoever in that trailer.
Okay. Yeah, then you have the second Mortal Kombat, which was delayed. Like, that was supposed to come out, like, last year.
And yeah.
Then they made it, like, 6 months, right? Which is not usually ever a good sign, but
I mean, it... Yeah, I don't know what they were doing, but at least, like, even the light strand of seeing, like, the Johnny Cage, like, story being, like, how it works, I'm just like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's a like good idea.
It's a good idea. It's a good like, idea. I see more potential. I like the martial artists that are in it.
Yeah, like, the
at
first...
At least just Joe Taslim and stuff.
Yeah, that first reboot movie was, like... not bad, other than like the weird like self insert character that they did, like the original character that they decided to have lead the movie. But you know, the story they were doing with like Scorpion and Sub-Zero, like that was, you know, that was kind of the real reason to go on in the movie. But you know, they spent that whole movie setting things up and they left Johnny Cage out. And now they have a popular character that they can have star in the second movie and like kind of see all of the Mortal Kombat stuff like new and fresh to him.
I think what I liked the most about that trailer was the unabashed Johnny Cage is in a parking lot and Raiden shows up and they're like, yeah, this is Mortal Kombat. It's like, we're going to another dimension and you're gonna fight. Like, you might make quips, but this is really happening and we're not above it as a movie. So, you know,
I'm hopeful
that, yeah, well, who knows. Yeah.
probably be better than Annihilation because it would have to be. So that comes out this weekend.
Very perfect. Similar timing to the first Mortal Kombat movie. I want to say it was about the same date,
the 96 one.
Yes.
Or, no,
I could be
August.
Wrong. It was in August? Oh, yeah. Okay.
Because I got that. I always think it was the same day. Movie. Best day of my life. Yeah, take your moms to see Mortal Kombat.
Yeah.
All right. What did any other movies?
Yeah, oh, for movies? Oh, Dave.
I made it out to see Project Hail Mary.
Oh, congratulations.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
We
already talked about it. Yep.
Yeah, I already talked about it. Totally loved it, and Amaze is now fully part of my household's lexicon. So,
oh, of course,
yeah, and I have been. I've spent the past few weeks on the recommendation. I think of What a Cartoon guys, Bob Mackie and Henry Gilbert. Been watching Ha Ha You Clowns from Adult Swim.
I haven't watched, but I saw that they were doing them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It is, as they say at the top of the podcast, it is difficult to describe exactly what is funny about this show, because it's definitely sort of along the lines of like a Joe Pera talks with you. Like, this is very wholesome, like deliberately wholesome and earnest humor, and is very, very subtle about exactly what it is parodying. The closest comparison is that it is in the style of Home Improvement. That it's a good natured dad raising three boys, and but these boys are so comically emotionally healthy and supportive of each other in their journeys, and but at the same time give big main character energy and are always the center of attention, are always very interested in the lives of the, like, the NPCs around them, like service people.
Oh,
like
that show.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I saw commercials for it, and I thought it looked fucking intolerable.
It is... And that's the other, yes, no, looking at the art style, it's not the kind of thing I'd be like, do I really want to watch this? But also that art style, it's sort of, I don't know, it's got layers. It lends itself to these very funny, subtle comic moments of ugliness, of deliberate ugliness, of them like playing oddly with their faces, tugging at their shirts when they're feeling awkward. Just these very subtle little visual tells of their inner emotional state while they are like bugging the airline steward about like, so where do you land after this? You gonna get to stay for a while? Are you right back up in the air? You know, like I don't know. It's hard to describe why the show is funny, but I loved it. And 11 minute episodes worth a watch. And is if you are a bit tired of the, you know, deliberate subversive edge of something like Rick and Morty, which I still really enjoy and also just finished up the most recent season of, it's definitely not that. It is the opposite of that. It is the opposite of an Adult Swim show where it starts being earnest, but then you're like, they've got to subvert it somehow, right? There's going to be a twist somehow, right? And there just isn't. Or if there is, it's incredibly subtle. So yeah, actually a bit turned out, I did not think I would like it, but a big recommend for me.
Wow.
Nice. Yeah. All I've got, we sort of talked about it, I don't think, on the podcast, but I only got one day to be able to see Speed Racer in IMAX, but I did get to.
Nice.
Like, I have seen that movie.
And I didn't even get that.
I know, I'm sorry. As I said, Bug North Door, or one of the indie ones, they'll put it out. But because I've gotten to see this movie. This was the seventh time I have seen it in a theater, It is only the second time I've seen it in IMAX, the first being when it first came out. Oh, so man. that is a rarity. And it was the 4K restoration that they did for the release, of course. So a pretty movie made prettier. Like, yeah. I can't even say it's prettier, but it is a rather spiritual movie in IMAX, just engulfing you as the flag comes down at the end.
Oh, man.
And then, joy. You know, what a joy, especially like, and he's still good, but those early Michael Giacchino scores, you know, yeah. Incredibles and Speed Racer and Ratatouille and Inside Out, like they're all so gorgeous. So Heck of a treat. Then again. Yeah. And I know the only other movie I picked up on the Criterion sale, because I get coupons because I have the channel. Yes, that is a big perk. I'll wait for a sale and then pay like $10 for $40 movie.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yep. The Pee-wee's Big Adventure 4K that they released.
Nice.
Been waiting for that. And there's a really good interview. You can find it on YouTube. Like, and Tim Burton starts out saying, I'm terrible in interviews. These usually go terribly. And it's Richard Ayoade that I have. I think I finally said it right from the IT crowd and director from submarine and stuff. But it was a really nice, like, long chat. It seemed like he actually felt comfortable.
Wow.
Doing that. They included one of the big sells. The reason I still have the DVD is they did an isolated score with a tiny bit of Danny Elfman commentary, but like isolated score tracks are so good. And I wish more discs did them. Movie to just like throw on. Yeah, so nice loaded set for anyone into the physical media space.
Awesome. I have a Pee-wee's Big Adventure tale to tell once we get into games, so I will hold off.
All right, and I have one game.
Well, what is it? What'd you play?
All right.
Go ahead.
I picked up Astrobot on.
Oh, yay. Yep. That's not what I thought you were going to say, but that's awesome.
Yeah, no, I did not get Scott Pilgrim, if that's what you were thinking. But
Nope, it wasn't that. I keep forgetting that game came out.
Yeah, hasn't gone on enough of a sale for me yet. But but Astrobot was down to 40. I had missed it at 30 when it was physical and went back and forth, but I was itching for something at the time. And I have beat everything except for the post game. You have to use every friggin'
the motherfucker levels.
I did all the motherfucker levels except for the unlocked motherfuckest of levels.
That level is so fucking hard.
It's so hard, and it's too long is the thing, because you have to use all 8 of the costumes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, I made it through 2.5, and I'm like, I'm done.
I just gave up. It took me probably a week.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Grinding some attempts and getting a little bit better.
Some
sections are easier than others. I'll say that, but it's just when you die.
That's the thing, because there's no save points, Dave. So it's incredibly long. Basically, Mario Sunshine.
Yeah.
Level of the hard Mario Sunshine levels.
And no checkpoints.
These are challenge.
This is a challenge stage. This is the last challenge of the game. It is meant to be difficult.
I didn't know this was optional content. I thought this is optional.
Yeah. No. Finishing the game is delightful.
Not that
difficult. Yeah.
I'm still it delights me in a way that my favorite bots that I unlocked still did not originate on the PlayStation. I think you know what I mean, Tim.
Yeah.
But where I'm just sort of because the game is so Sony centric and it is a mixed bag for me, because I don't really dive into as many of the Sony AAA things. So all the God of War characters, I'm like, okay, you know, all the Tomb Raider, whatever. But there's enough that you don't care. It was just funny when it clicked, I think, somewhere. It's probably the Uncharted level where I'm just like, oh, this is just a really good Lego game. It's a Lego game. Mm-hmm. You're collecting costumes. You're doing parodies of different things. Mm-hmm. It does such an incredible job at the level design, as well as just the sensory of the controller. You know, everything sounds and feels unreal, really.
It's incredible. So, I wish, they kept putting out levels for it every couple months last year. Mm. So it was always nice to dive back into. I mean, obviously you would just have access to those.
Yeah, I think I played everything
the speed run levels that are
What I mean. Yeah.
Which, you don't have to really speed run to get all the bots out of them. So
I didn't really.
Yeah, if you just perform them normally. You'll be fine.
It took maybe two for a couple of them to make sure. But
yeah,
the only one that was hard for me is the monkey paws.
Those are tricky. Yeah, those are tricky. I struggled with that one, just being fast enough. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ugh.
But yeah, no, it was a great time. I just really dove in.
I would take another one of those games immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Just so nice to play.
Yeah, I would love if it could go further away from even, we've had two that are that hardcore with Sony. Obviously, it's fun to get the niche characters and stuff, but that's the game is good aside from that. So
yeah. I don't know how. I mean, I guess I don't know how much it would be fun to collect all those characters again. Because there's 200 guest bots, and it's just oh, it's you again. And it was so much fun in this one to be oh my God, it's you actually did include a guy from fucking what's that game, Rogue Galaxy?
Exactly.
Just some bots in there from games that only I would think of or remember this was a PlayStation game, this is a PS2 game.
And on the greedy side, once they start doing that, that's all I want. So I'm just sort of if you've got blank, you could have blank. But
we could go to the next level.
Yeah, exactly. Where's the Battle Hunters?
Yeah, I know. That's what I was thinking about that. I'm like, are you going to do Battle Hunters at some bullshit?
Intelli, whatever games, those cheapy PS1.
Yeah, those Agitech games. All right.
But yeah, great time. No complaints. I could see why people put it as game of the year, contender slash winner.
Yeah. No, I thought you were going to talk about Devils on the Moon Pinball.
I am also waiting for sale on that for now.
I just decided to go in and get Devils on the Moon.
Oh, nice. How do you feel?
I am eagerly awaiting the Steam release of that.
Yeah. Oh, was it coming out on Steam? Yeah. Oh, yeah, I love it. It's fantastic. Awesome. It is, you know, reminds me of the feel of playing like those Game Boy.
Okay, then I'll probably
like Pokemon Pinball.
I heard like Kirby Pinball, somebody said. Mm-hmm. Felt like
not quite as floaty, but yeah, that I mean, like when I think of Pokemon Pinball, in like one of the mechanics of this game is like collecting devils, and when they pop out, like they're bipping around right above the paddles, just like they did in Pokemon Pinball. Even though it's a three tiered stage, so it is a little bit bigger, but yeah, but the physics feel pretty darn good. I love pulling out and playing it. It gives you like challenge levels. I wish there was a place that I haven't found a place where it just kind of explains how the table works. You know, I'm still kind of like figuring
like
it
the
out.
Table just goals.
I get the gist of it, but I don't always kind of know what the flow of it is where it's like at the very top, there's a castle. And if you hit these crystals, then, you know, these guards will show up and you have to hit, there's like two lanes of guards you have to get rid of. And I haven't gotten through that yet for that part of it. Then in the middle, there's like this big bumper in the middle that looks like a moon. And there's a thing that rotates around it. And whenever you hit it, it like fills in like a brick where this arrow is. And it changes directions depending on what flipper you hit last. So you want to fill that in. And then the moon changes phases. And then like on the bottom table, it's about like, you know, getting devils out, and then you hit the devils, then it adds the devils to your devil collection.
It looks incredible. Yeah. Like looking at the Steam page right now, just watching this looping video. The Steam release date says Q1 of next year, so it's gonna be a long, painful wait for me. But yeah, because it just looks like and what's funny is that the Steam page says inspired by Game Boy and PC Engine era classics, but it definitely feels like a combination of, it definitely feels like it sits between Kirby's Pinball Land and Pokemon Pinball, like right down to the table layouts. Like it's very, I can tell it's very Pokemon Pinball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I could see the feel, you know, Devil and Alien Crush, but yeah. So yeah, that's got me. I've been all over my playdate recently, just getting back into like finally. Well, there's so many games that I've like bought or like from the seasons that I haven't gone back to.
Yeah.
I never realized that I never finished Recommendation Dog, even though it takes like 15 minutes to do it. I was just, I must have like played it a couple times, then got distracted and never actually played it through to when you recommend yourself to be a good boy for a family. yeah, and I've been playing that rhythm game from season 2. That's like really cool. Playdate, man. It's and season 3 is on the way later this year. That's so exciting. So it's like, yeah, I've been trying to get more into the habit of playing on my playdate. Like that's what I've been carrying around with me more.
Even
that, like when I take my kid to, you know, his soccer games, and I actually watch them. Because I like seeing my kid play soccer, but also because I don't want to get hit with a ball. You know, during like halftime, it's like, oh, I can play a game for like 3 minutes. So pull out the play date and boom, boom, boom. And it fits in my pocket. It's not worth carrying around like a Switch or a Steam Deck for those purposes. Yeah, that would be very silly.
No, I'm on a Discord with some like local, like Austin game dev stuff. And just more reassurance that like people love developing for this thing. Like,
cat sighting.
Cat spotted. Yeah. She won't be scared by that.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, oh no,
it's great to develop for.
great to develop for. It's got, like, you know, not one but two open source systems that they just give out to devs to go ham on. So, yeah.
I'm impressed when I see 3D demos for Playdate and just how smooth they all seem to run, and like what I cannot imagine the development environment for a polygonal game.
A completely monochrome
polygonal game and how you shade that to effectively convey a 3D space. But it's incredible.
I started watching some videos trying to learn how to do it, but then I got sidetracked by that other thing that I have to learn to advance my career. so I'll get back there eventually. I mean, kind of like, I don't know, if just something about getting used to writing code in, you know, plain text things is, I don't know, there's some of it, like, makes sense both ways. So, like, I don't feel like it's time wasted. And the Devils on the Moon pinball developers have, like, a whole series of blogs, like, talking about, like, the development process that I'm going to read through just to kind of see what they did. But, yeah, I mean, Dave, you should get a Playdate.
I know.
You should just get a Playdate. Don't make that face. Well, you know what? You got a big boy birthday coming up. Just tear off the bandage. Get yourself Playdate.
I could be enjoying
these games with us.
I guess I had not thought of asking for a Playdate for my birthday. I literally just last night told my family all I want for my birthday is, like I said, take me to the local arcade and out for pizza. Take me to the local arcade and to the good Detroit pizza place across the street from the local arcade. That's all you can get me for my birthday. But now I want a Playdate.
Yeah, now you can escalate it to a Playdate.
Like, even though I'm about to discuss my own new portable.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, you just got to skip like a couple of these little portables that you get, and then you can have your own Playdate.
I know, but I'm already seeking out yet another portable, because the portable that I got is not expressly a portable, but it's the GameSir G8 telescopic controller for Android phones. And even though I have often...
Did you talk about this last time?
We did. We talked about how these are not good and how I don't like how these feel. And this is finally a good one. This is the first one I have ever used that has made me be like, I should seek out a more powerful Android phone. Because I'm using this with my $24 Walmart burner phone that I bought last Black Friday. And it is powerful enough to run one of my favorite indie games from last year, Parking Garage Rally Circuit, which just released some DLC, the European Tour, which adds 8 new tracks based on 8 unique European parking garages from Paris to Monaco to Barcelona. It's fantastic. I love this game. It's a fantastic racing game. Got to play that game. It's dirt cheap. The DLC is dirt cheap.
I mean, I own it and the soundtrack. It's installed on my Steam Deck.
Yeah. Oh, the fantastic
soundtrack.
Amazing soundtrack. And it runs like a dream on this $24 Walmart phone. Runs perfectly. I mean, it's a very low spec, you know, Saturn visual targeted game, but it plays perfectly on this. And so I'm like, oh, geez. Well, this,
you know what else it plays perfectly on? The Steam Deck you already own.
I know. But this is littler and lighter. And can be in other places. Honestly, my Steam Deck, almost in a lot of ways,
it just stays in the house, doesn't it?
It absolutely. I never take the Steam Deck out of the house. No. Yeah. But also, like my Switch, I mostly play it docked. It's the Steam Deck is now my main home console. So this is now my mini Steam Deck. And what's remarkable to me is that these can be effectively a mini Steam Deck. Now, the caveat is that this GameSir controller retails for $80, and I would never pay $80 for that experience. I got it used for about $30. And to me, that's worth it. Like $30 for the controller plus $25 for the phone to get something that is more powerful than any dedicated handheld that costs twice that, at least twice that, is a great combo for me. Like, I love that I can really actually play a large chunk of my Steam library with very little compromise on this dirt cheap ass phone. And so now I'm like tracking down used, like, Snapdragon powered phones from 5-6 years ago, because even those are even more powerful than this and will run games better. and will like run an even more significant chunk of my library. And like, realistically, these are a mini Steam Deck. You know, I got this one because it has a USB-C pass-through port, so it does not need to connect to Bluetooth every time. You just pop it in and it just instantly works, instantly maps. You know, it's the closest thing to a dedicated handheld, and I love it. And it blows my mind at how much of my Steam library it just plays flawlessly. So I've been playing that, and if I can bring it back to Pee-wee's Big Adventure now. So the reason we had to record early was because me and the family took a trip to California. We went to Palm Springs, and the airport that we flew into was like an hour and a half away from our Airbnb. So we had to drive right past the famous Cabazon dinosaurs that were featured in Pee-wee's Big Adventure. So of course we stopped. Of course we checked them out, did the whole thing. Like, they're still pretty amazing.
Awesome.
If only it would be amazing, even if it was just like, well, this is one of those pure Americana roadside attractions that we really don't have so much out here on the East Coast, that tend to proliferate more west of the Mississippi, as it were. And so it was like, just for the kitsch value alone, it was just this fascinating sort of cultural touchstone. But then, like, you go behind the actual dinosaurs that were featured in the movie, and they've got this whole dinosaur park now filled with dinosaur sculptures and weird animatronics. And it's just this very silly, unique experience. That was great. And so we were just delighted to be able to live through that iconic movie scene. So that was great. The
Buffalo Zoo has some animatronic dinosaurs this summer.
They do? That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's real fun.
So, yesterday we briefly stopped by to say goodbye to two of the red pandas that are going elsewhere.
Oh, that's a shame.
Well, they have four red pandas. They have an abundance of red pandas.
They have more than enough red pandas.
Yeah.
All right. So, still good of you to say goodbye.
He's got
to
move around. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're Richard's favorites. He was forlorn.
Oh, of course. So the game that I played on the airplane was Earthbound for the first time in my goddamn life.
Never heard of it.
I get it now. You know, it's still a very good game, still totally holds up, but also like I finally now see everything that it inspired, and just getting to experience it firsthand feels very educational. It is in a lot of ways kind of exactly what I expected, and yet still very surprising in many ways. Like, the music is honestly pretty revelatory. The super unique use of sampling is really wild, and just just the stylistic choices that are being made are as head scratching as they are charming, and still just surprise and delight to this day. So I didn't get very far, because then we got home and then I didn't have any more time to play it. So sure.
Yeah, you don't have any portables you could fucking play a game on, right?
It's been a month, as has been for you. It has been a month. It has been a month mostly of driving my children to their theater shows, which both opened this month. So it was like two back-to-back tech weeks of late night, nightly drive there, pick up, switch to the other kid. Because the other game that they've been playing, the equally wacky Tamagotchi Life, Living the Dream, just released.
Oh, sure. Everyone's loving it.
Switch one.
Richard has been circling that one for the past couple weeks and has not pulled the trigger on it yet.
Well, did he ever play the first one for 3DS, or the first Western one, I should say?
No, he played the demo. He downloaded the demo and he played it, and he was like, "Dad, I have to get this game."
It is. My girls both loved the 3DS version on their 3DSs, and so they like pooled their money together to buy this game day one. Like, they've been looking forward to this. They had a plan, and
like teenage boys getting Alpha 3.
Yeah, exactly. Oh,
we just need to get a copy in the house. Yep.
We and Jan and I ended up splitting it three ways with them to encourage their enthusiasm. So I like just like us, split three ways with Alpha 3. So I really haven't actually touched it myself, because honestly, it's not the kind of game that I think I really have the patience for, because it is, you know, leans more, skews a bit more toward the Sims style of life sim than it does something like Animal Crossing, where you are just making these little people and watching their ridiculous lives. But their lives are just so comically ridiculous. Everything you've seen on the internet is true. We laugh constantly at this game. They are always thinking about the next people they should make. They're like, we should put Mom Donnie in there. We got to make Zoran Mom Donnie, you guys. And yeah, they're now thinking of all the famous people they want to make and put in the game and see who falls in love with whom every day. Like, their big news to me is, Dad, this person has a crush on this person. Dad, you and Mom got married in the game. Dad, the cat has a crush on you. Like,
great.
They made the cat. She has a crush on me, which again tracks with real life because the cat loves me the most.
There you go.
Yeah. So that game is a ridiculous delight. And I know people who are like hardcore into the series have some critical complaints about whether or not it is better than the 3DS version. And I think that's missing the point because this game exists for comedy and not for like the life sim aspects. Yeah, it's a comedy game. It is Nintendo indulging their wackiest instincts, which I always...
It feels like you should just be happy that you got it. Like, that it exists.
I'm absolutely delighted sitting watching them play this game and laughing their dumb little heads off. It's great.
Like, I think we are 2 months away from New Rhythm Heaven.
Oh, baby. Yeah. That is also... My girls are very much looking forward to that, too.
I actually have that pre-ordered and paid off at GameStop.
I just got some Nintendo eShop credit at a whopping 20% off from Newegg. I'm sure that deal can no longer be active, but I jumped on that because I know I have to finance a new Rhythm Heaven.
Yeah. I mean, it's only $40. It's insane. Yeah.
Wow, really? Retail 40?
Yep.
Incredible. 32 for me.
Yeah, no, I had a moment because I finished Resident Evil Requiem. That game's some nonsense, especially, my God, like the last, the climax of it, because you switch over to, I don't remember where I was at last time we talked about it, because it was like a month and a half ago. I feel like I was into Leon stuff at that time, but maybe not.
I don't think you had quite gotten there.
Yeah, okay. I think maybe I was like just before the Leon.
Because that was a weird spot where I've talked to enough people at work that I was like, oh, I know way more about this game than you do right now.
No. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the first half is with What's-Her-Sit Grace in the I have finished it before I went on vacation in the beginning of April. I made sure that I finished it, so this was a long time ago. The gray stuff is in this care center. You're supposed to play it first person. I chose to play it third person because that's just my preference, though I could see how the first person created a more intense experience. And then it switches over to Leon, who is in Raccoon City. I mean, that was in the trailer. Spoiler, that's where he is. And his part felt like a little shorter than I thought it was going to be. Like, you kind of get dropped into this like big open-ish area. It's not really an open area, but it's, you know, part of the city, and it's like broad daylight, and you got to like work your way through there to accomplish various goals to like open a gate, and then you go on this ridiculous motorcycle chase where you shoot mutant dogs and chase this other guy on a motorcycle around. Very different aspect of Resident Evil than the first half of the game, and then, you know, then it's just like a nonstop nostalgia farm there until the end, that I won't get into, but I was surprised. I'm just like, wow, it's just one thing after another that you're throwing out here, aren't you, right now? Little ridiculous, but yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was a blast to play through. I don't know. I ended up really in liking, I don't know. Like, I almost like kind of the limitations of the Grace parts more, than the action parts of Leon, but, you know, it left me, I just really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed Resident Evil Requiem. And then I was like, well, then I went to play, I was going to like play through it again, but this was like after I had been out on vacation. I kind of like forgotten some stuff. And I realized like, oh, it doesn't have like a straight new game plus, you unlock, I unlock some stuff like for Leon, but that's like, oh, I got to play through like all the gray stuff to get there. And like the way to unlock more stuff is to like hit these challenges. And I'm like, oh, I don't know that if I remember I don't know if I'm going to be able to remember all this stuff right now because I played through the game like 2 weeks ago. And then I was like, how much will GameStop give me for this game right now? Oh, it's like more than what Rhythm Heaven will be. You know what? I'm going to trade this in. I'll buy it. I pick it up again in a couple years when it's $20.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's how I went and traded it. Well, GameStop was doing like a deal, like an extra bonus percent too, or something like that. So I got like a fuckload. GameStop, with a couple other things too. Yeah, I know. I know. I keep an eye on it. keep an eye on it. Because it's right there by my house.
When they acquire eBay, it's going to be so great.
I mean, my only fear is the store will go out of business before I can pick up the game. But it's that little cursed Thruway Plaza location that's like 5 feet wide that Darren used to work at. That's still there. Oh, somehow. Wow. That one is still there. The University Plaza one closed down.
Okay.
I don't know if you remember. Yeah, that was the Main Street one. But
yeah. Honestly, I should avail myself of that kind of strategy far more often. Just laying out for a brand new game, finishing it, endeavoring to finish it quickly enough to return it and recoup as much of the cost as I can, because especially the kind of game that will definitely be less than $20 within 2 years if I ever want to play it again.
I remember to a moment like when the Resident Evil 4 remake came out and it was out and I was like, there's no point in me getting this. I never have any time to play it. Like, forget about it. And I remember that same day that I made that decision, like I got home and it was like 7:30 and Lauren's like, I don't feel good. I'm going to bed. And I'm like, God fucking damn it. I could be playing it right fucking now. So I went and bought it like the next day. And then I had like,
I know all too well that like, wait, you don't want to do something with me tonight? Well, that means I have personal free time. Oh man, I got to take advantage of this.
I could do whatever I want, but no, the game I want to play, I don't have it. So then I went and bought it. And then after that, I only got to play it for an hour. And then didn't touch it again. And then I see it for $20 and I'm just like, fuck. So now I know the strategy is actually just hooking up the PS5 to this monitor here in front of me so I can just play the horror games here at my desk. And that's the way to do it. So now I'm playing through Resident Evil 4 remake. that game's great. That's fucking A. Resident Evil 4, man. Holy shit. That took a little bit of adaptation of going back to that, because in Requiem in the Leon parts, like I was not running around quite as much. I was just kind of like using my firepower and dinking and ducking around and that, but in like Resident Evil 4, you gotta run around those areas and like, because there's just dudes coming at you from all angles all the time, just popping up. So you gotta stay on the move and like pick your spots, throw in some shots, and then like keep running around and like find different ways to maneuver around. And it's cool. That game, pretty good. I see why people like it, including myself.
Is it? I didn't follow a lot of the critical response to the remake. Is it along the lines of a Metal Gear Solid 3 Delta, where like they're not inventing the reel with this, and reinventing the wheel with this remake, but the original game is so solid that you don't need to change much?
No, I think people look at it as being better than the original. Like they added a knife parry to it. Which is a whole new mechanic. Like went through, there's a section at the beginning of like chapter 2 or 3 that they added to the game where they kind of teach you that mechanic where, you know, an enemy will go to grab you or swing a chainsaw at you and you can parry you can actually do this in Resident Evil 9 as well. Parry the thing away or like smack things out of the air with your knife. And it's like really cool. And I've heard that they've kind of added and like made some other like adjustments to the game and like, that some people find it to be superior to the original.
It's not just
like a one-to-one. No, it's not just like a one-to-one deal. I swear they changed a little bit about how some of like the treasure works with the merchant and how slotting things work and stuff like that. I haven't played the original Resident Evil 4 in a long time, so I don't remember exactly. It's just stuff that I'm like this feels different than it did before. Like there's certain gems you can find that you can trade, and I don't think that was a specific, you don't sell them, you trade them for like a separate list of items, and I don't think that was in the original.
So I'm
playing through that now because I'm still in a Resident Evil mood.
Well, that seems to be I was gonna say that Resident Evil movie coming out now couldn't have been better timed, because more people are playing than ever. It feels like
Well, between Requiem and Pragmata, it sure feels like Capcom has captured the cultural zeitgeist.
Yeah.
I guess I got to play that demo.
Yeah, I still haven't played that. I've heard great things about that game. I'm probably going to pick it up at some point, but I'm doing my thing where I don't buy new games at full price, and I wait a little bit till they're on sale, and instead, if I'm going to buy something new, I buy an indie game. Like I did with Mugenics back in February, which I think so I got credits in that game, which the credits roll at the beginning of Act 3. Like, there's obviously plenty more game left to go, but at the second I see credits, like, a lot of times just my interest starts to fall off.
Sure. And,
like, I put like 85 fucking 90 hours into that game. So I'm just, I found myself, I think I'm putting it down for a while.
I've done some money's worth.
I've done some Act 3 stuff and some other. I still played probably like 10 hours, 10, 15 hours after I got credits. But the point I'm at now, I'm just like, okay, I've played this game a lot. It's time to put it aside for a little bit. But yeah, the only other thing I've been playing is Pocopia.
Sure.
Which I have been playing a lot of. I've played more than my child has. And then he gets mad when he sees how far I am and how many Pokemon I have. And I said, bud, stop playing Fortnite. And it could be you. Like,
look at what you could have.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm not like speed running this game. I've been playing other stuff. It's just like, you just keep playing Rocket League and Fortnite. And you not Pocopia, so you're behind on me, and stop getting upset about it. But I think he felt like when I rolled credits on it, I think he was upset because he thought I was going to stop playing, but I have not, because like it's still now I'm kind of in Animal Crossing mode with it, where I'm just kind of like, I am picking it up and doing like a little bit of stuff every day. I'm just like, oh, maybe I'll build something here. I'll make some habitats there. I'll like collect some resources over here and then put the game down and it's fine. There's still like, there's an area that's like the freestyle zone, where it's just mostly clear land where you can just build whatever the hell you want. And it's a massive area. And there's like Pokemon to that area that are unique. So there's a whole bunch of stuff that I can do there. And it's not really meant to be played with until the late game. And I didn't really go there until the late game, until after I'd finished it. So I have all that stuff. But there's stuff in the other areas, still Pokemon to find and stuff to do and ways to make things better. The most significant thing I want to mention is that Richard and I have been playing. So when you play together, which was the whole point, the whole reason he was excited about me getting the game was so that we could play together. Now, when you play together, you can't really build together unless you go to a Dream Island or you go to that aforementioned freestyle late game zone, and then you can build Anarchy stuff zone. Together. Yeah. Otherwise, you know, in the main, there's four like story areas to the game. You can just kind of like wander around and like look at stuff with each other. Yeah. However, there is an ability, like you are a Ditto, you can transform into any object in the game. Okay. So him and I have been playing Prop Hunt, basically, in Pocopia, which if Prop Hunt is, I don't know what game it originated in. I've seen it exist in Call of Duty, where basically you have one team, which are guys with guns, and then the other team are assigned like just stuff that is on the map. Like you could be like, you know, a set of stairs or a tree or like something that hangs on a wall or a rock. And then one team is shooting stuff, trying to find, it's kind of like hide and seek, basically.
It's hide, yeah.
One team is trying to find where, you know, you, as a prop, you try to use your prop as appropriately as possible so you don't stand out. And so the other team doesn't shoot you dead.
Right.
So that's what it's all about. So, you know, Richard and I will do is go in there and one person will sit on one end of the map and the other person will go and will transform into something and try to hide amongst, like, you know, what we've built in the level.
And you have to close your eyes in real life because you're sitting in the same room doing split screen, I presume.
Well, right? I mean, no, we're each on our own Switch.
That's easier then.
Yeah, we got two copies of the game for this purpose.
Okay.
So it's like we just sit at opposite ends of the couch and he'll go and hide and I'll, you know, sit there and wait, or like I'll hide or whatever. Yeah. And, you know, then we have to give each other clues because it's It'd be impossible otherwise, but it's, we've been having a great time doing that. It's just like, nice. Okay, is there any Pokemon you can see? Like, what are you, a block? What are you made out of? Yeah, so that's been wonderful.
That's a delight. Just
playing that. Yeah, and you can get up to four players in there, and that seems basically what the transformability is there for, so you can play that type of game with your friends. Like, you can do it. There's like a mini game. Sometimes Pokemon in the game will be like, hey, do you want to play hide and sneak? And you have to try to sneak past them like Metal Gear style to get to the Pokemon Center. But yeah, it just seems like a fun way to goof with your friends.
Oh, that's cool. Nice. Yeah. After we discussed Pokopia on the podcast last time, I did go ahead and like rebuy the original Dragon Quest Builders on Steam because I had only owned it on PlayStation Vita.
On the podcast.
Did I actually do yes. it during the podcast?
Yes, you did it live on the podcast.
I have yet to touch it, of course. And that's partly for fear because, like, I know once I start it, I'm just going to want to play that every second of my life, and I got too much other shit to do. So it's partly self-discipline. But yeah, just hearing about Pokopia just makes it sound delightful.
It's super good. I think I'm probably over 60 hours into that game now.
Ooh.
And probably didn't think that was going to be, it was just kind of like, okay, my kid wants to play it with me. And now it's like,
here we are.
A lot of fun. It's really good.
Nice.
Has to be a system seller for the Switch 2 because it's not on Switch 1, which is,
right.
Yeah.
My God, would it sell if it was on Switch 1, but
do
probably
you
moved some
feel
Switch
like there's anything technologically happening in the game that, it couldn't be on Switch 1, or are they just sort of enjoying more RAM and more?
I think it has to be like the volume of objects in an area that it's keeping track of, like all of these blocks and items and stuff you put down and the Pokemon running around and what they're doing. I feel like that has to all add up to something. Whereas like in Dragon Quest Builders or like, you know, a Minecraft, like, it doesn't feel, well, I haven't played Minecraft, so I'll shut up. But, you know, in Dragon Quest Builders, it's like, okay, you might encounter enemies, like, out in the field. But, it just feels like everything feels very lively. Like, these Pokemon are moving around even when they're not on the screen with you and going around and doing stuff. So
there's a lot of the AI tracking to be held in RAM at any given time.
Yeah, and all the objects around and stuff. And that you can break anything. And
Yeah. Funny, Julia's playing Breath of the Wild for the very first time. She finally beat what has been her favorite game, Ubisoft's Immortals Phoenix Rising, the infamous Breath of the Wild clone. The very competent and well-made Breath of the Wild clone. But she's finally giving the real thing a try, and we're playing it on the Switch too. And I feel like it is weird to see it running at 60 frames per second. It's almost like too smooth for me. It's giving me like TV motion smoothing vibes seeing it run at that. I mean, it's beautiful, it looks gorgeous, but it also just feels wrong to me. But also she keeps asking me things because she spent a lot of time watching me play both Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom, and so often we are both of us conflating things in our minds, and she's like, dad, the champions, why are there no ghosts following me around? When do I get like the champion ghosts following me? And I'm like, nah, honey, that's in Tears of the Kingdom. Why is it not in Breath of the Wild? Because that game was not as optimized as Tears of the Kingdom, and they could not figure out how to give you on-screen companions and not have the game completely like slow to a frame rate crawl by doing that. Tears of the Kingdom made a lot of, you know, they tightened up that code a whole lot to be able to accomplish.
Yeah, Breath of the Wild was made for the console that came out before the Switch.
Yeah, that's it. End of my thought.
Woo!
No, I just remembered that, I haven't touched either of these games yet, but Target had a deal somewhere early April where it was like one of their Circle deals where it was supposed to be buy two Switch games, get $30 off.
Oh, but yeah, I saw this.
Somehow there was a little bit of a whoopsie uh-oh where instead you would buy two Switch games and get $30 off of each game.
Yeah.
I got Kirby's Air Ride because I wasn't going to pay full price for that.
Excellent.
And the Hyrule Warriors, the newer Hyrule Warriors, Age of Imprisonment.
Yeah.
But I haven't gotten to either of those yet. But I also had, when I went to check out, I realized I had a gift card balance on my account. And I was like, oh, this is, I paid $50 out of pocket for those two games. I'm like, fuck yes. It feels so good. It felt like robbery.
No, I saw that glitch and I was late to the party on that one. Good on you for getting on it.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it worked. I was like, shit. I saw some people were getting like games for free.
Yeah.
Because they'd get two $30 games and they'd just send them the codes in the email. Like, here's two games for free. You do nothing. total foolishness.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Yeah.
But yeah. All right. That's it. That's all I got.
Yeah.
For this episode.
Same. No, that's all right.
What a tidy episode. Okay. We even bullshitted about Star Wars for like half an hour.
It could be a normal size podcast.
Yeah. This is why we didn't have an episode last month, because we didn't do anything.
Yeah.
But yeah, next June. Probably sometime in June, there's certainly going to be a Summer Game Fest. Mm. There might be a Direct.
Oh.
There might be some PlayStation Presents State of Play type deal, some Xbox stuff, because people still adhere to, all the companies still adhere to that June window for announcing like all their games, even though E3 is long dead and gone. So,
and hopefully the Hollower comes out by then.
There must be a stock price.
I'm waiting for that. Yeah. I know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's probably
it's
a good time to get ahead of like fall.
Yeah.
You know, your fall release dates out there and announce stuff. Yeah. Because then you're that makes sense. Because then you're announcing stuff that might be the winter of the following year that would be before the end of fiscal.
Yeah.
So it probably just makes sense. All the companies just cycle around that now and they can't stop themselves.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Maybe we'll try to schedule a podcast around that. June traditionally a busy ass month, especially towards the end. So we'll see. Keep an eye out. But yeah, thank you for listening. And we'll see you all next month.
Yeah, it's been great. Goodbye, everybody.
There we go. We did it.